This case involves the interplay of two constitutional provisions. One is the Seventh Amendment, which, as you heard, preserves the right of a jury by trial in suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20. That means a defendant is entitled to a jury if the claim at issue is brought in court and is legal in nature. Some examples include a common law fraud action for damages or a claim of fraudulent conveyance or fraudulent transfer of property. The other provision at issue is Article III's vesting clause, which provides that the, quote, judicial power of the United States shall be vested, close quote, in federal Article III courts. Ordinarily, Congress passes a statute and authorizes someone to file a lawsuit in federal court to enforce a particular statutory obligation. One example might be Title VII's prohibition against different kinds of discrimination in the workplace. Then there are certain rights called public rights that the Constitution does not require to be heard by a jury in federal court. Congress can assign the initial enforcement of those rights to an agency for an executive official to find the facts, apply the law to the facts, and determine the appropriate penalty for a violation of statute. The precise definition of what qualifies as a public right has been the source of debate in this court's precedents, particularly in cases involving private disputes. But one thing that has remained undisputed and repeatedly stated in over a century of precedents is that a public right includes rights belonging to the government in its sovereign capacity. To quote Justice Scalia, public rights refer to rights pertaining to claims brought or against the United States. Because the Constitution permits Congress to assign public rights to agencies for initial adjudication, the key question in this kind of case is whether a public right is at issue. Today's decision runs contrary to settled government practice and long-standing precedent. Throughout our nation's history, Congress has authorized agency officials to adjudicate violations of statutory obligations and award civil penalties to the government. This court, in turn, has repeatedly declared that practice to be constitutional. The last time this court upheld this kind of scheme was approximately half a century ago in the case called Atlas Roofing. There, the court unanimously held that Congress could authorize the government to bring civil penalty claims in agency enforcement actions under the Occupational Safety and Health Act. Unsurprisingly, Congress has taken this court's word at face value. It has enacted hundreds of statutes authorizing countless federal agencies to impose civil penalties for violations of statutory obligation. This means, for example, that if an employer maintains unsafe working conditions or engages in unfair labor practices, including something that might cause the death of a person, government agencies can bring enforcement actions against the employer and impose civil penalties for those statutory violations, which the employer can then ask a court to review. This is despite there being common law remedies for the injured party to pursue in court and before a jury. Or here, the Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, can initiate an enforcement proceeding and impose civil penalties, subject to judicial review, against someone who defrauds investors in violation of federal securities law. And those individuals can bring their own suits in court. Today, for the first time in our history, this court holds that these kinds of statutory schemes are unconstitutional. According to today's majority, the Constitution requires the government to seek civil penalties for federal securities fraud in front of a jury in federal court. The majority says that the nature of the remedy, that it involves civil penalties, resolves this case. But we know that is wrong from the more than a century of precedent to the contrary, including Atlas Roofing. Not one of the cases relied upon by the majority involves the agency adjudication of civil penalty claims brought by the government in its sovereign capacity. The majority also says that federal securities fraud looks similar to common law fraud, or similar enough, for which a jury is constitutionally required. That alternative explanation fares no better. Common law fraud is materially different from federal securities law. We have said that in a dozen or more cases. Common law fraud requires a showing of reliance on a defendant's misrepresentations, as well as proof of actionable injury. This is not true for a federal securities claim. Unlike the common law, federal securities claims belong to the government in its sovereign capacity and not to any particular individual. Securities laws are meant to protect not the individual investor, but to protect the integrity of the securities market and vindicate harms to the public at large. A faithful and straightforward application of this court's precedents should have resolved today's case. Indeed, we expressly said in Atlantis Roofing that, quote, Congress may effectively supplant the common law cause of action, carrying with it a right to a jury trial, with a statutory cause of action shorn of a jury trial right, if that statutory cause of action adheres in or lies against the federal government in its sovereign capacity. Close quote. We could not have been any clearer. The majority today brushes aside this court's precedents in dealing with it and deals a devastating blow to the manner in which our government functions. Yet not once in the majority's opinion will you see the word stare decisis, nor will you see any acknowledgement of the hundreds of federal statutes that are now in peril, or of the numerous agencies that may be stripped of their power to enforce statutes Congress has enacted. In fact, many agencies likely will lose their ability to enforce federal statutes because they can only impose civil penalties in administrative proceedings. To those agencies, the majority says, tough luck. Get a new statute from Congress. By giving respondents a jury trial in federal court, even one that the Constitution does not require, the majority may think that it is protecting liberty. But do not mistake judicial hubris with the protection of individual rights. In reality, the majority has taken power that belongs to Congress by prohibiting Congress from assigning to the executive for initial adjudication claims that are sovereign in nature. Litigants seeking further dismantling of the administrative state have reason to rejoice in their win today. But those of us who cherish the rule of law have nothing to celebrate. Because this court fails to act as a neutral empire when it rewrites established rules in the manner it does today, and because it disregards the co-equal partners in our system of government, I, with Justice Kagan and Jackson, respectfully dissent.